I just remember calling people that I served with and telling them the news just to find some type of comfort that they were in the same level of pain that I was in, like shock, and trying to find some comparison as far as pain and just like overwhelming feelings that I was going through. And every single person I called said, "I'm sorry for your loss." And I was just like, but you knew him too. Like, he helped you. I saw him help you. Like, I was by his side. And then I'm going on the cycle of, oh my gosh, like, I remember every single person that he helped. And now everybody's calling me, responding with, oh, I'm sorry for your loss. But I'm like, that was not what I was expecting. And honestly, that was the most upsetting information I got after his passing, because I just felt like people were undervaluing the time and attention and help that he was giving others.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Alicia, who is the founder of Awareness Athletics, an activewear brand that spreads mental health awareness by wearing it. The beginning of her mental health journey began when she joined the Navy at the age of 19. Alicia is originally from Nebraska and enjoys traveling, indie music, and working out for mental health. As part of her continued service, she shares mental health tools, resources, and coping mechanisms with others so they can also further their mental health journeys. Alicia, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited for this episode.
Yeah, so I'm going to pass it off to you so you can just share your story with the audience. And if you just want to tell us, you know, where you came from. I know I told a little bit about your background, but maybe you can expound on that and just share your story with your mental health journey so far, and we'll take it from there.
Sounds great. Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to be on the show. And again, we mentioned that I'm originally from Nebraska and I joined the Navy at 19. However, I'll go a little bit more into detail on that. I was raised with five siblings, one of them being a twin. I was the middle child. And pretty diverse family as far as half siblings. I had step siblings at one point, and I also have many other siblings that some I haven't met yet. So that's an interesting fact about me. Also, growing up in Nebraska, I really wanted to get out of Nebraska, and that's why I joined. So reflecting back, which we'll probably talk more about my siblings, because they do have a lot to do with my journey and my story. So at 19 years old, I wanted to move out of Nebraska. My twin and I have always been very ambitious about, you know, doing big things, living in a big city, just being very adventurous. So when the idea of joining the Navy presented myself, when my dad mentioned it to me when I was 18 or 19, he joined the Navy when he was my age or that age. So he was in for 4 years and he was like, it's just like a 9 to 5. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll put that in the back of my head, but I'm like, I don't know if that's going to be for me. And then I was in high school and then I realized, okay, we were in English class and everybody's like, get out your essay so you can apply for scholarships. And I was like, oh wait, I don't have any money for college. So that's when I decided to join the Navy at 19 years old after I graduated. So this begins pretty much my journey, and then a little shortly after, my mental health journey, my physical journey. So I got to Norfolk, my very first station area in Virginia. And this was the first time I ever separated from my twin, which was very strenuous because I was like, you know, so close to her like this. So I was very dependent on her without realizing it before we separated. So there were a lot of skills I had to learn for myself. And the main skill I had to learn for myself was social skills. I didn't realize that I depended on my twin to start all these conversations and meet new people. She was the one that would approach people. So once we separated, I realized, oh, that's how I started meeting and talking to people. This is a skill I have to learn by myself now. So that was one thing that was interesting to me once I first joined. It is overwhelming moving 3,000 miles away from home. Once you get to your new space, it was very hard for me to make friends with that social anxiety that I recognized that it wasn't a challenge that I was facing. And then I think to go along with that, I realized two things when I first joined. I learned that I liked learning and that I was really good at my job. So to put all that emphasis on learning and education, the more that I learned and the more skills that I learned while I was in, I started to have a lot larger responsibility than I was used to. So there were simple things at first, but then there were more categories and the weight of that responsibility began to weigh on me. I began thinking about all these simple things such as checklist, to-do list, things to do on the computer, which don't seem as important as I was probably making it in my head. But with all that responsibility, I began to have this type of anxiety that I never had before. I was thinking about, those things I had to get done at work after work. And I was also thinking about them late at night when I was laying in my bed and I was worrying like, oh my gosh, did I get this done? Am I going to get it done in time? Everybody's counting on me. And what I noticed in the military is if you're good at one thing, the leadership is probably going to resort to you. So it kind of makes you think, like, I'm the only person that knows how to do this and do this well. And that's something that now I look back, I saw a lot. But at the time, I just took that all on upon myself. So again, I had this anxiety where I couldn't sleep. I was overthinking. My brain just couldn't process things like for myself outside of work. It was my main focus. So with that lack of sleep, I've also was feeling anxious to the point where I was more fragile and jittery and startled. And that's how I recognize now if my anxiety is high, I will feel, if loud noises, they'll make my body feel really fatigued. So that was something that I was experiencing. And I had anxiety before when I was growing up, but never to this point where it was kind of just consuming me. So to backtrack a little bit, my twin sister was in the Army National Guard the same time I joined the Navy. So we graduated 2 years apart. And she actually was really good at her PRT. I am barely past mine. And I remember her saying she ran like 2 miles in like 15 or 16 minutes, which was pretty fast for me. Like I couldn't even run a mile and a half barely in that time. So, fast forward, I'm stressed out at work. I can't sleep. My body is just, not coordinating with my mind. So I thought of that time where my sister mentioned how she did so well on her PRT. And I'm at the point where I couldn't barely run. I never worked out for myself. It was something I did in high school, not for pleasure or anything I had to do even while serving active duty. So I go outside this one day in Virginia. It's a beautiful day. It's so nice outside and the sun's shining and since I'm there, I'm standing, I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, well, if she can do 2 miles in that amount of time, what if I can just try to run 1 mile? So I set out to run this 1 mile. And to my surprise, everything that I was worrying about and stressing me out, it just didn't come to mind. The only thing that I was thinking about when I was running was one foot after the other. So by the time I was done with this first mile, I kind of just stopped and looked around. I was like, oh my gosh, my world isn't crashing anymore. Like I can actually be present and focus on feeling good, which was something that I wasn't be able to be aware of since I was only thinking about all the anxiety I had with work and the things I had to get done. So looking back now, that was actually the first point in my life where I was able to use exercise as a method to be present with my mind and my body. And it really found that it helped me clear my head. And so this was a huge turning point for me as far as my mental health journey and my my fitness journey. At the time, I was more thinking fitness because I was running, but looking back, it definitely more benefited me in a positive way when it came to my mental health. So after that first run, I began to run maybe like 2 or 3 miles a week, and it just slowly progressed. I remember walking by this kickboxing gym called Nine Round. You might know it, but I walked by it before when I first moved there, and I'm like, oh, that'd be cool to do someday. And eventually, I would say like maybe 6 months later, I ended up going to that gym. And it was just weird to see because I didn't have the confidence, you know, to talk to anybody, to do anything for myself or work out in general. So to be able to join a gym and be so confident in that way, it really made a positive impact on my confidence and my view of myself, and kind of just gave me the idea that I can do a little bit more if I'm doing it at a progression time that is comfortable for me. So I'm running now. I think the most I ran before I joined the gym was about 3 miles. And then I'm at the gym. I'm getting this momentum, but there's still that one thing that bothers me. It's that social anxiety. Even though by this point, it's probably maybe like 8 or 9 months in to my fitness journey. My twin was still, she began to live with me. So I have her support, but I still have to do some things on my own without her, especially if I'm traveling with the military. So again, that social anxiety was still very present for me at that time. And I found this run club in Virginia. It's called the North End Run Club. And I would see it online. And I saw it looked so fun. Everybody was, you know, doing the same amount of miles I was doing for myself. And I was just looking at the ads online. I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe one day. And I just, that thought of it just got me so anxious that like I wouldn't know what to do or wouldn't fit in or wouldn't be fast enough. So I ended up following that page for almost a year. And so about a year into my fitness journey, I actually went up to the meeting location because they meet every week. And I was in my car. I remember it was raining and I saw everybody. They all looked happy. They're all standing outside getting ready to do their run. And I'm like, okay, I'm here. I got this. And I opened the car door and I'm like, nope. And I close the car door and I just walk away because, and I drive away because I was just still at that social anxiety point where I felt that I wasn't ready. And many of my friends and family can attest to this, that this was something I was very uncomfortable with, especially with meeting new people and having that new connection, especially when it was surrounded by fitness. So I can't say or remember why I ended up or when I ended up going again, but the next time, I think it was like maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, I ended up getting out of the car and I think I walked up to some people, and now I remember I did the run, didn't really think much of it because I'm remembering, okay, running with people is so much better than running by yourself. So I really enjoyed that part. So that part was done, which was technically the easy part for me because I didn't have to talk to anybody while I was running. So now we're at the social part where we're meeting at, you know, the bar after the run and everybody's standing there looking happy. And it was still very overwhelming to me And actually, one of my good friends now just said something. He was like, "Hey, where are you from?" And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, somebody's talking to me. I don't know what to do." But having a friend like that approach me, or technically he was a stranger at that time, initiate that conversation when I was experiencing that social anxiety actually really helped me open up and just talk about myself and just connect with everybody there. So he was actually my first friend in that run club. And now I actually connect with him and everybody in his friend group now. So it was very enlightening to have someone reach out to me and, you know, go as far as to actually getting on my car and doing the run. And that was the point where I felt comfortable enough continuing my run club and going whenever I felt that worked with my schedule. And if I felt, you know, good emotionally, mentally, I would also proceed to that. So this is about, I would say, this fitness journey continued. So the running, the kickboxing, and I started lifting. So I was doing all these things and I ended up losing about 30 pounds amongst 3 or 4 years. So it's not a lot of time, but the people who met me when I first joined the military that were still serving the same command, they noticed that now I'm at the command helping train people and help people, you know, do their PRT, and my PRT was better. So I came a long way when it came to progressing in my fitness journey and progressing in my PRT and everything along those lines. So once I was at AFL in the Navy in my command, we would end up having new people in our command, and they would say, what I would help them with their PRT or their weigh-ins or anything like that. And I remember somebody mentioned to me that, oh, this is easy for you. And I just thought in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like not even why. Oh yeah, because that's what they said. They said, this is easy for you. You've always been fit. And I'm like, that is not the case at all. You know, and then that's when I came up with the phrase in my head, like, I work out for my mental health. This is something that I do to make me feel like I have an escape where I can actually clear my mind. What I initially did during that first run, it just progressed into, you know, losing that weight and going into all these different fitness categories. So I felt so misunderstood at that time. And that was just something that I kept at the back of my head while I was still serving. And so that was extremely important to what I do now. So what I'm actually doing when I'm doing these fitness tools and, you know, going to all these different events and meeting new people, I realized I was actually building my confidence as far as self-confidence. Because again, when I imagine that 19-year-old who just joined, I don't know how to talk to people. I even had somebody, he was one of my mentors, and I was walking in the hallway and he was like, why do you always walk with your head down? I'm like, what do you mean? He was like, you literally look like a sad little puppy, just like walking with your head down. I'm like, he was like, put your, like, you know, lift up your shoulders and look forward. Like, you have this, like, you're doing a really good job. And I'm like, oh, okay. But, you know, at that time, now I'm realizing my confidence was so low because I was dependent on my twin. This was a new experience for me. And I never just had that type of acknowledgement as far as individually doing well, because I've had so many siblings. Like, you know, we're all good kids, we all do good things, but I was never categorized as or pointed out as being one person that's doing good. So I can believe that would be one of the reasons why I had such low confidence. Yeah, so I'm that 19-year-old kid, and again, never worked out before I joined the Navy. So when they said that comment, I'm like, okay, this all progressed in a very short amount of time. And the skills that I was also building outside of that self-confidence was the way to have coping mechanisms to let out my anger and my frustration when I was working. So like when I was, you know, kickboxing, like I would picture people's heads as far as like how they would treat me at work or, you know, some comments that they say. And, you know, that was my way to get out my anger and my frustration. And it was just, you know, at the time, like part of my routine, and I knew it made me feel good, but it was actually helping me connect with my emotions and connect with my body. That way I was having this sort of balance. So over a time, I was just building these subconscious coping mechanisms and, you know, in my idea, building, you know, furthering my fitness career. So it's really important to know now that I was building those skills because I knew the importance of habits. One of the books that I read on deployment was Atomic Habits, which is a very helpful book when it comes to relating or building better habits that and getting rid of habits that you don't want to do. So 2018 is when I deployed on a carrier, and I actually read amongst that year, that was my self-help year. So I read about 25 different books, audio and, you know, on in physical books. So yeah, I was like super motivational, you know, I was really into it. And, you know, I just was very positive in the way I was approaching people, finding that, you know, valuing that confidence that I had in myself and in my fitness routine, and being able to share that that energy and lend a hand to other people who were actually maybe seemed as less confident as I did when I first joined. So another thing to point out during the 2018 deployment was when I was 15 years old, to kind of backtrack here, I lost my grandmother to suicide. She passed away on an overdose of medication. And what I realized then, again, looking back on it, is that I was probably feeling emotions of depression. I was super angry. I was irritable. Like, I didn't want to talk to anybody. And just my teenage years, I struggled with that depression. But my idea, since I didn't talk about it growing up, was that I had this phrase or idea that everybody is selfish and they only care about themselves. So what's the point of even opening up to anybody? To fast forward to go on that 2018 deployment, I realized, okay, everybody's here on this ship and there is, you know, all these people here that are trapped in this room of, like, you know, well, not really a room, a ship, but, you know, everything's like gray and people are just pretty much trapped with their own emotions and their own traumas and everything that they have to deal with. It just comes up when you're in such an isolated state. So when I was in my self-help era, I realized that I could target that energy to help others rather than, you know, be depressed the way I was in high school, because I realized, oh my gosh, like I'm feeling depressed the way I did in high school. And then I thought, oh wait, other people around me are too. Like, it's physically, like visibly obvious that people are depressed. So I said to myself, well, why don't I just be that one person that helps others that isn't selfish the way I used to think about it in high school? So that's when I used to, you know, lend an ear and find all these individuals that I wanted to check on daily. I knew that they were having a hard time just in general or with family or with work. So being an ear and have that available time to, you know, listen to people was very valuable to me. Because now that I think back to it, it's probably something I wanted when I was younger. So in that aspect, that was something that was really important to me. And I began to talk more about mental health resources. And I remember, you know, thinking about my grandma's passing away and how she passed away, and how I wanted to help out with the suicide prevention in on the ship or within the command. So I even started to research resources in order to do a presentation for my squadron. So that was pretty much the first time I started gathering all this information to really become a mental health advocate. I was using that confidence that I built physically and emotionally and mentally in order to share these resources that not only helped me, you know, helping people made me feel better, but hopefully help people that were using the resources or being able to have somebody listen to them. And that was the beginning of being the advocate and sharing the resources and knowing how important it was to me to be a good friend and be an advocate in that community. So after that deployment, I realized once everybody went home to their families or their friends or, you know, maybe by themselves in their own barracks rooms or anything like that, that I couldn't be there with them physically how I was on the ship. So I ended up having like this type of anxiety attack that I didn't even have when I first started having anxiety in the Navy. I just remember waking up and I just felt really irritable. The normal kind of anxiety that I remember. And then I went to work and everybody was there. And this girl told me to smile or something like that. And I was like, I just can't. And I just started crying, but I was also hiding my emotions. Like, I wasn't used to crying. So, like, I had like this chipboard, but I was like crying with my head down. I was like, well, maybe they won't see me. So I started crying. And, you know, I guess, you know, the feeling where, you know, you have tears and your chest just gets tight and you're kind of just holding everything in. Pretty much I was at work the whole day and I was crying. Like, I did not stop crying all day. And I even had people, like my supervisor, because I would be at my desk try to hide it. And he was like, Aguilar, you know something's wrong. Like, you need to go talk to somebody. And I'm like, the thing that made me continue to cry was that I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know why I was crying. So it kind of just started this cycle of, you know, something's wrong and I can't put my finger on it. And I was so stressed out about that. And like when people would check up on me, I wouldn't know what to say. And this is actually a very long day now that I think about it, because I probably went in at 7 and I started crying, was continuing to cry. And I even talked to my best friend and I told her, well, maybe it's all of these things. You know, these are going on. And she was like, yeah, these are going on in your life. These can be the contributor. And I was like, yeah, I'm not connecting anything emotionally to anything specific, even the valid reasons that she pointed out. And then I ended up staying, having watch that night also. So I was there until like midnight. And I even called my parents. I told them how I was feeling. Like, nothing was giving me any type of comfort. And I just noticed throughout that day, I started to develop this type of numbness in my arm, in my neck. So it started in my ear. And like, the more I would cry, it would just go more throughout my body. So my ear, my neck, my shoulder, and then it would go down to my hand. And like, so if I grab something with both hands, like, it would feel completely different. Or if I put hot water on my left shoulder, like, I wouldn't be able to feel the same way that I do on my right side. So that's how I knew something was like physically wrong. And the time it would come about, that's when it started. But it was obviously when I was in distress emotionally or mentally. So I think I still struggled with that for probably about a week. I was having on and off anxiety attacks and still trying to get rid of that feeling. So I would do massages and just go about those coping mechanisms that I already had established as far as, you know, working out, making sure I was eating, anything along those lines. So I just kind of like tried to wait it out and see, hopefully that it went away. So it did at that point, but to fast forward, so that was in 2018. I've always wanted to move to California. So it was a big dream of mine. I had all these expectations. So when I finally got the orders to go to California, I was absolutely floored. I like legit laid on the floor and I was like, oh my God, Jesus, I can't believe that this is actually time. I'm actually going to go to California, my dream. So yeah, goes to show I had very high expectations for this type of life I was going to live in California. You know, everything I dreamed of when I was a kid. So now we're in 2019 and I am making the big move, trying to say goodbye to everybody. But I remember specifically about the day at my last command where it wasn't like a full day. So it was only like half of the people worked, or maybe a handful of people worked. So a lot of people left to go on underway or something like that. So I remember not being able to say goodbye to people that I spent the last 5 years working with. And that was pretty upsetting for me because I knew that goodbyes were not easy for me in general. So like the last time I would see people, it was like the side view of them or them walking out, or, you know, not even knowing them or realizing it would be the last time they would see me or see me for a while. So it was hard for me because I grew so close to everybody. You know, they were my family outside of my immediate family. So I really valued those relationships. So I wasn't able to say goodbye. And it just was extremely overwhelming because I didn't know how to say goodbye or just feel like I was of value of taking a moment of their time to make sure that they valued our friendship the same way I did. But yeah, I will refer back to this later. So I worked that last day. There's a handful of people and they just make sure, like my supervisor was like, okay, well, you know, you have to make sure you get this done. And, you know, we have to, you know, the mission is always important. It's always first. And I'm just thinking like, this is my very last day here. Like this is the last time I'm going to see everybody. And like, nobody's acknowledging it. And I was just so bummed. And like, by the time, like, it was like 5 minutes before we left, like, I remember my supervisor saying like, oh, it's your last day. Oh, and I'm like, yeah, it's 9 o'clock on a Sunday. This is not the way I wanted to leave things. So yeah, just to say I was extremely disappointed in that goodbye and just the way I left things. But I just wanted to try to put that behind me and, you know if the relationships that I valued that I would see, you know, them again, whether if I was traveling or anything along those lines, that maybe it wasn't goodbye forever. So I go to focus on my move to California. And this was a very nice trip. I went home for a little bit. I was trying to figure out what area I wanted to live in California. This is San Diego. So this is pretty nice place as far as activities, beautiful scene, nice neighborhoods. And that was my main focus. And so once I got there, it was actually almost my birthday. And again, I had that social anxiety. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm here like really by myself now. And I got overwhelmed to the point of, okay, there's so much to do here. Now I have all these possibilities that make me want to do actually absolutely nothing because I'm too afraid to do it on my own. Like at that time, my sister wasn't there yet. She was supposed to be there for a couple more weeks. And I was just trying to, you know, check in and focus on me or this new beginning that I had such high expectations for. And sorry, I'm probably going to cry. I was like, oh, let me get my tissues.
If you need a break at any time too, that just let me know.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is the first time I feel like I've been able to talk about it. Yeah, so I get to my new command. I'm there for like 2 days, and I get a phone call from one of my good friends, a corpsman from Virginia, and she calls me kind of out of the blue. It's a FaceTime. It's a Sunday morning. I'm like, that's kind of weird. But I'm like, oh, cool, she's checking in on me. But she called me and she said Austin's dead. And I was like, this isn't true. Like I'm immediately, my stomach started hurting, and like I just couldn't wrap my head around what she was saying and what was going on. So to give some context, Austin was a very close friend of mine. Well, first of all, I would call him Linda. So have you ever seen the video that goes like, Linda, Linda?
Yeah.
Listen, Linda.
Yeah.
We would actually say that to each other because we would never listen to each other. So we actually both called each other Linda. And that was kind of like a cute story that we had. But everything I learned in the Navy, he actually taught me. So we're the same age. He's like, 3 months younger than me. And I had 5 different jobs in the military. You know, admin, paperwork, computers, fitness, like everything along those lines. Like he did it maybe like a month or so before me. So he was able to teach me everything. So he was by my side. We were by each other's sides pretty much throughout the whole time. We knew each other at my last commands, which was about like a 4 to 5 year time frame. So the way I like to explain it, or I like to ask others, because I think if you've served, you probably have an example, but I always ask, well, who is your Vinny? And they'll say, what does that mean? So when my dad was in, he had his best friend named Vinny, where they would, you know, get into a bunch of trouble, like, you know, just have a bunch of fun. But, you know, even 30 years now that he's been out, he's been able to call Vinny, you know, in a different state and be like, hey, I need a place to stay. And we've like spent time with him and always had a place to stay and spent time with his family. So someone that you know that you can always count on once you met and served with them in the military, like they're like family. So goes to show, Linda Austin was my Vinny. And it was so difficult for me to comprehend what had happened. Like, I didn't know how he passed away or like what was going on, what to believe. So I just started calling all these people, and everybody else is as shocked as I am, because first of all, now I'm at the point where I have to explain like who it is and how important he is to me, because the only people that actually saw that relationship was the people I served with. You know, my family wasn't there every day, so this is technically just another service member or friend. Like, I can't really explain the bond that we have. And I just remember calling people that I served with and telling them the news just to find some type of comfort that they were in the same level of pain that I was in, like shock and trying to find some comparison and as far as pain and just like overwhelming feelings that I was going through. And every single person I called said, I'm sorry for your loss. And I was just like, but you knew him too. Like, he helped you. I saw him help you. Like, I was by his side. And then I'm going on the cycle of, oh my gosh, like, I remember every single person that he helped. And now everybody's calling me saying, responding with, oh, I'm sorry for your loss. But I'm like, that was not what I was expecting. And honestly, that was the most upsetting information I got about after his passing, because I just felt like people were undervaluing the time and attention and help that he was giving others. And it really hurt me in that way. This was the first time that I experienced a deep level of depression. So to go back to the California thing, I was not having the experience that I was ideally wanting. I went to work, and again, I had to, somebody asked me how I was doing, and I shut down. I'm bawling, and I'm like, I can't, you know, like I can't explain to them, like, they don't know who this person is for real, because they don't know me. They only met me 2 days ago. So I'm there trying to explain, you know, I just lost this friend. I don't know what's coming up for me. And I think everybody was supportive, but they didn't know what to say or how to comfort me. So I was still alone. My twin didn't get to California yet. And so I would just call people and cry and just think of, like, try to think of positive things, but I actually was experiencing emotional blunting, so I couldn't feel anything at all. Even when I was crying, I wasn't sad. I just felt complete numbness. And then this is when I later found out, I think it was maybe 2 days later that I found out that Austin had taken his own life. And that's when enormous amount of other emotions came up, of me thinking, okay, now all these people that he helped, like, how did they treat him? How did they, you know, value his friendship? And I remember before I left, he was drinking a lot, but he was drinking with friends that drink a lot more than I did, I guess. So it kind of, like, upset me in a way of, like, why wasn't there, like, why didn't they look out for him? And I had a lot of anger along those lines of feeling as if, like, I could have done something or somebody could have done something. And I think if anybody has lost a friend or a family member or loved one to suicide, that you can attest to those thoughts that come up as far as guilt or thinking of signs that you could have seen or gone into, and just feeling pretty hopeless in that amount of time as far as having the reaction to losing a friend to suicide. And so, yeah, I remember, well, this was probably a month after he passed away. They ended up having a memorial at the squadron for him. So I ended up flying back to Virginia to connect with, you know, speak at the memorial and connect with everybody that I've served with. And I was really happy that I was able to give a speech on his behalf and our friendship, and just to speak on his character and see him grow over time. Like, we were young at the time. He was, I don't know, maybe 19 or 20 when we first met, and then he passed away right when he turned 24. So I was able to see him grow and just speak on that and really shine a light on how valuable our relationship was. But I also noticed that a lot of people were still kind of just able to move on. And I think that's something that kind of freaked me out, because again, I just kept thinking, okay, well, why are people not as much in pain as I am? Why is this passing, like, not affecting them as far as, like, how much, you know, he was involved in our lives, and he was always at work and always helping people. And even at the memorial, there was some people that maybe I didn't have good relationships with, and we're also really close to him, and we ended up hugging. And it was just so, like, look what he's doing. Like, he's bringing this beautiful moment between two people that are in pain, that don't even like each other. And I was just kind of just blown away as far as finding those people that just really wanted to shine the light on Linda or on Austin, as far as bringing representation to what he brought, you know, into the military, but mostly outside, because now that I look back at it, Austin was my support system whenever I would get stressed or overwhelmed or just felt frustrated with other people. I would just be able to sit next to him, not even have to say anything, and he would just look at me and he said, "I agree." And I'm like, "Oh, thank goodness." Like, and I didn't realize the one of the coping mechanisms that I was using him as a safe space. So with him gone, then I felt as if I had no safe space at all. I had no support system. I felt as if nobody is going to be able to understand the way that he did, because literally throughout our whole career, we did everything together. You know, all the hard times, all the late nights, all the people we, you know, that were super frustrating. Like, we were able to do that together. So it was difficult to be able to hold all that weight as far as, you know, him separating technically from the military as well. Now it kind of felt all that responsibility was on me. And to fast forward, I'm, you know, finally back into work. My sister shows up in California. She's giving me as much support as she can. And so keep in mind, it's just us two in California. And I'm still at work trying to learn the new job and meet new people. And yeah, everybody's not as social as I expected as far as like hanging out outside of work. So I'm like, okay, cool. Now I still have to make new friends. And yeah, shortly after that, because this was August 31st, 2019, when Austin passed away. And I was still overwhelmed. I'm like, I don't want to go to all these events. There's too much to do here. And I don't want to do it by myself. So I was like, oh, eventually I'll get the confidence and I'll go out and do stuff in San Diego. Well, then March comes around and COVID happens. So I'm like, okay, cool. Actually, no, I have an excuse not to go. So I think a lot of people can say that they either went full speed in COVID or they took a break. And I was definitely the one that took a break. My twin definitely went full speed. So I would be laying on the couch and she would be working on the computer. And I'm like, okay, we both have our different things and that's fine. But a goal that I had when I was in California was to, you know, kind of like pursue this fitness journey further as far as kind of looking like a bodybuilder, you know, start making influencer videos and all these things. But after Austin passed away and COVID happened, I actually ended up gaining weight, not being able to, you know, work out in general because of COVID or find a gym or anything I was comfortable with. So everything shut down. And so now I'm at this position probably 8 months after Austin passed away. And it's just my sister and I. And then I still have to work because military still had to work during COVID. And I kind of remember a day where she mentioned to me, okay, well, you know, when my business is going to do this, then we're going to do this together and you're going to work for me, blah, 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 blah. And she like was kind of like ranting. And that's when I realized kind of like what my emotions were when I was connecting with my body. And Anita and I, my twin and I, never used to talk about mental health or emotions, anything like that. And this is the closest person to me in the world. So when she was ranting, I just remember thinking and kind of like blurting out, like, I'm depressed. I'm like, stop. Like, I can't just put my hands up. I'm like, I'm depressed. And then I kind of just looked at her and she was like she didn't know what to do. She just didn't know how to respond. She looked like a deer in the headlights for anybody who's listening. But it was actually really funny looking back at it. But and then I asked her about it recently. She was like, yeah, she was like, I was just so thrown that you said that because we never said anything like that. And she just didn't know how to react in anything of those regards. So it was pretty funny, but also the first time I ever spoke about, you know, how I was feeling or what I was going through into words into a family member or somebody that that was my support system. So this is when my twin started to become my support system, because we ended up having many arguments during COVID when it's only you two in one house for how many months. We always say that we were kind of, our relationship started to become a marriage at that point, where we were always bickering at each other. But I told her, well, you're the only person I know, because I haven't made friends yet. And well, you have to be my friend. I just lost my friend, and you have to be that person for me. And then it was just kind of awkward, because now we're at the point where, you know, she has these expectations of me, and I had her expectations of her to be my friend and, you know, the only person I rely on. So obviously those boundaries weren't really going to get fulfilled either way. So this is when I had to start saying, like, during my depression, I knew even in high school, if I was depressed, I shut out. I'm not nice. I have really bad energy. I'm, you know, like the silent anger. And my family knows this the most, but during COVID, I had to start talking about my feelings and what actually upset me about what she said or how she reacted. And it was extremely challenging. So anybody who works on the communication skills, as far as expressing how you're feeling emotionally or mentally to somebody out loud, I congratulate you, because this was the most difficult skill I have worked on as far as learning and actually easily used today. But it was just extremely challenging at that time. I was still feeling numb. I couldn't connect with any of my emotions. Now I gained weight. I just still didn't have any friends that I felt that I could hang out with on the level that I did with my best friend, Austin. So even just being outside, I remember San Diego has these beautiful sunsets. There's palm trees. There's dogs walking everywhere. It's so gorgeous. And I just remember, I'm like, wow, this would be really cool if I could connect with happiness. I'm like, anybody who would see this right now would feel so happy. But I'm like, I just don't feel that way. But I also gave myself grace as far as, you know, I don't feel that way right now, but I will eventually. And kind of just thought of the way of, over time, I can, you know, time heals wounds. So that's kind of the approach that I took on it. So a couple months later, the gym's kind of open. Not really, sort of. But I kind of just got fed up as far as, you know, I didn't like the way I looked. I felt like I couldn't recognize myself as far as my weight and just how I was taking care of myself. So I ran into my neighbor, which we actually became good friends. And she had a roommate that did a body competition before. So she said, oh, let's go work out with my roommate's trainer. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever, it's free. That's fine with me. So we go to work out with her trainer. And literally the next day, she texts me and asks me, oh, do you want to do a body competition? And I said, okay. So that's when I started my journey to do a body competition, my very first body competition. And it actually got pushed back many times, because it was supposed to be initially June to September, and then it got pushed back to December, and then it got pushed back to February, and then March, and then actually ended up training for a year. So by the time I was training for a year, I was kind of like, okay, I mean, I'm already used to this routine. I'm just waiting for a final date. But I think a lot of people that are on my social media that know me really were inspired by that dedication that I had to, you know, completely change my diet and my workout routine, and just were so inspired and motivated by everything I was doing. You know, they were just saying all these nice things, but still didn't really change anything about my emotions. So I remember when I first started training, a lot of the times we would do it outside because it was still during COVID. Yeah, I would still go home, and I would, on the drive home, I would just think a little bit about my friend passing, and I just couldn't stop crying. It was like the uncontrollable crying again. My arm kept feeling numb again, how it used to when I first had that anxiety attack. And this was a symptom that I would feel often and would stress me out even more because, okay, why is my arm feeling numb? You know, why am I still crying every single day? Like, this lasted like 6 months before I noticed that I was actually not crying every day. And it just took a lot of time and work as far as incorporating new skills and finally starting to reach out for therapy. Throughout this whole time, I was trying to depend on working out, eating in general, and then starting to have a safe space support system with my sister. So those three coping mechanisms are very helpful. However, at the time, I don't think they are exactly what I needed in order to get through that. And towards the end of my first 6 months of going into the bodybuilding, again, everybody sees what's going on at the outside, but they don't actually know what's going on, you know, at home or in your head or, you know, with your emotions. So this is December of 2020 now, and actually rolling into January, I get a phone call, and it's from my mom, and she's crying. And this is at a point where she just got a divorce with my stepdad that they were together for at least 14 years. And this is probably like a year after separating. She said, I haven't heard from him, and I told somebody to go check on him, and the doors are locked. The doors are pretty much like bolted shut. So I kind of like got this gut feeling that something was obviously wrong, but I felt the need to be strong for my mom. I knew, you know, she was probably feeling the same way I felt when I lost, you know, my best friend, Austin. So yeah, they get the landlord to open up the door somehow, and this is the news that I found that my stepdad had also passed away the same way that my best friend did. He took his own life. And the thing that's triggering for both of them, for me, is that they did it in the same way. And it's just, I just felt ironic, like it was almost a year apart, and all those emotions that I felt with Austin, I can say for myself that they didn't come up the same way they did for my stepdad. But it's not because I didn't love him. It's because I felt I was probably still trying to, you know, process all those emotions with my best friend. And now I just kind of thought of the way of, oh, this might be a way of my sister's feeling the same way I did when I first lost somebody extremely close to me. So, and I just want to say that my stepdad was such a lovely father figure. All he did is give us girls love, and my mom and him met it through rehab. So after they were both clean, my mom's, 25 years sober now, that's how they met. So when he reframed his life, he put all his good attention on my sisters and I, so all we saw was love. And it's just kind of unfortunate because before he went to treatment, not all people saw that side of him and got to experience only the good. So it took a lot of weight, and just felt like we were the only ones that knew him in that really precious and beautiful and loving way. And it was hard to process. So that's when I decided to, you know, for sure get therapy. This was all during the same month. And thankfully I had someone to kind of talk me through on a daily or weekly basis of, okay, what are you feeling? What do you think about, you know, the passing of your stepdad or your friend? and just start that journey as far as furthering opening up and talking about my emotions, which I never used to do. And so to go into, this is going to be a year now, which would be the year of training. So June 2021, I do my show. I do my bodybuilding show. I'm in therapy, and I definitely want to get out of the military. So I applied to get out of the military, because something that I was also noticing when I was on in the military was that even though I was doing a simple computer website or simple computer Navy program, like, it was actually giving me so much anxiety, which now I realize was a form of PTSD, that these are the websites that Austin used to show me. So it was a reminder, he's not here, you know, just all those emotions when he first passed away, they all came up to me. So I wasn't able to properly focus on things. And again, I was actually on a midnight shift, so I wasn't sleeping well. And then I was, you know, having these symptoms of flashbacks of what happened with my friend and how people treated him, and how I just, now that I realized that, I felt so like people broke my trust, that these were all my friends that I served with, but now they're not treating Austin with the same value and love. And it just really broke my heart in that way, because I thought I was close to all these people, but it turns out, you know, they're thinking of themselves, which, I mean, I don't blame anybody to do, but at the time I was deeply disturbed by that. And so I'm working on the process of being in therapy, just in my body competition, and I'm finally getting out of the military. So this fast forwards to August 31st, 2021. So yeah, 2 years after my friend got passed away, I was able to get out on the exact same day of his anniversary. And it just felt like God is giving me a sign of like it's finally over for both of us. Like, I felt like I was carrying that weight when I was in the military, as far as every day there was a reminder that he wasn't here, and that, you know, I was doing it for us. And, you know, he had a son, so I was thinking about, you know, all the pain that his son was feeling and his family was feeling. And it was just a very overwhelming time where I kind of just felt like a relief of, oh my gosh, like, we did it. And just trying to further that experience as far as honoring him and honoring his time, and really just having the time to acknowledge the work that he did and he taught me, and to finally put it to an end and go a little bit further into my veteran life. So I don't know what else I should share at this point.
Well, I first want to say I relate to so much of your story. It's crazy. I mean, in different circumstances, but I can relate to so much of it. I can tell that you really value your relationships, and you're a huge empath. And I think as empaths, it can make it really hard to deal with suicide specifically when we're serving in the military, because hearing you talk, I feel like I felt the same way when I lost someone to suicide in the military, and I didn't really process it at that time. So I've actually realized a little bit about myself and listening to you talk, is that it is very disturbing or disconcerting or discomforting to lose someone and feel a certain amount of emotion and not see the other people around you that also served with that person experiencing the same emotions. It can be really hard to deal with. So I really appreciate that you brought that up. And anxiety was something that I also struggled with when I served. And I think it's something that's really not talked about enough, because I think that more service members deal with anxiety than is really talked about. I think it's almost a regular part of everyone's day-to-day lives. And some people just don't realize that they have that anxiety, because it really, mental health is not in my opinion, where it should be in the military, as far as giving people the tools to really understand themselves, especially people that are joining at younger ages and don't even really understand who they are as a person. And then all of a sudden now there's all this responsibility. So I too am from the Midwest. So I thought that was an interesting connection point to him from Iowa. But yeah, so, you know, I really appreciate all the stuff that you shared and listening to your journey and just seeing how you laid it out step by step, because you put it in a perspective to help the listeners understand that it's not just one day I woke up and my mental health was great, or, you know, I started running one day and then all of a sudden it was all good. It really is such a roller coaster, and we learn so much about ourselves all the time. So as far as what you are doing now, with your brand, mental health related, is that rooted in your experiences from the military, or how did you get to that point?
Yeah, I would say it started from that initial question of, the initial phrase of, oh, you've always been into fitness, you're just that fit girl. And I'm like, no, that's not the case. So going back to the social anxiety, what I used to do is have these pieces of conversation starters. So I would wear a shirt of a band that I liked. So if somebody commented on my shirt, then that's a conversation starter, because we already have something in common. And being able to find common ground was one key thing that helped me overcome that social anxiety, because I wouldn't have to just walk up to somebody and hope for the best and try to figure out words, because I think so much about my words before I say them. So especially in conversation. So if it's a stranger, for some reason, I think the possibilities of us having anything to connect on is limited. So, which is not the case. That's just a belief. But yeah, I would have, or like pizza, swimsuit tops, just funny things. So with the brand, I remember before I got out, I would always think about that phrase. And then what I would respond to is, I work out for my mental health. This is why I work out. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could just put that on a t-shirt. And so before I got out, I did put it on a t-shirt, just had it printed, you know, online, sent it in, and I posted a picture of it on my story. And I was surprised to see so many people respond with, I love that phrase, I can relate to that, this is so awesome, like, I agree. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe I should do something with this. At the time, I was still working out as far as the bodybuilding. So now I'm thinking, okay, if I do something with this, why does it have to be like one big t-shirt that doesn't fit a lot of people as far as body proportions? So I was thinking, well, why can't I just make a activewear set as far as bras and leggings? Because I would see so many people in the gym wearing cute stuff. But I was like, why can't it be cute and also have a really good awareness to a cause and be that conversation starter as far as opening up that conversation about mental health? So my idea was, you know, wearing a cute shirt or sweater, or, you know, even on like a bra legging set, say I work out for my mental health or awareness athletics, and allowing people to open up that conversation. What is that? Well, and people have an opportunity now to share, you know, what mental health means to them, kind of like how I felt I was misunderstood. Now I have the opportunity to let people know visually, because they can see it on my shirt, but also have people kind of feel the same. And maybe if they feel comfortable, open up a conversation about that. So to kind of, I guess I'm trying to think of how it connects with majority of my story. I think it just connects with my fitness and my fitness and my mental health journey. But I mean, being a advocate is something that I was always passionate about. And then as that grew over time, when I was in, I wanted to obviously do more with that and do a career that was something I cared about. Not that the mission isn't important, but the thing was, like, me working an admin job in the Navy and surrounded by four gray walls every single day for 12 hours. You know, they don't even call you by your first name. They call you by your rate or your last name. So you're just another number. And, You know, and I've seen it, like, before Austin passed away, we had somebody pass away that everybody was really hurt by, and that, you know, you see their name every single day on those paperworks. And, you know, that's not just a name, it's a person and someone that you connect with and shared memories with and, you know, gave value to your life. So me knowing that, you know, I could just be a name on a paper and not there anymore and then just be replaced instantly because you have to, because a mission, like that's just heart-wrenching for me. And I just couldn't connect with that. I'm like, I don't mind working. I love working. You know, you guys know I love learning and doing, you know, things that I care about to my highest potential. But if it's just going to get turned over to something that I don't really value, then I want to put my passion more into something I care about, which is why I started with the idea of the t-shirt and the brand. And as I started continue to work out, I thought of the name Awareness Athletics. funny thing about that, I was watching this TV show. I think it's called, maybe it's called Girl Boss, but it was the episode while she was thinking of her name. And then I was running, watching it on a treadmill. And then I thought of my name during the same episode. I was like, oh my gosh, what are the odds? But yeah, that's my brand, Awareness Athletics, AWEARNESS, as aware. And just having the brand to spread mental health awareness by wearing it. And I knew I wanted to go to school. So I called the advisor as far as the school that I dreamt about going to in high school. And I asked them about their social media platform. I was like, oh, I really want to do social media, something that can help me put the word out about this brand. And then the advisor is like, well, why don't you just get a fashion marketing degree? And I'm like, oh, okay. So as soon as I got out, I started to attend my dream school, Academy of Art. Shout out Academy of Art. I absolutely love this school. And I started to learn about fashion marketing. I started also joined this mentorship group for helping designers build their collection as far as knowing nothing from fashion to launching their brand. And that's also shout out to that mentorship, which is Factory 45, because awesome community, helped me grow and helped me learn in and outside of school of how to you know, build a brand or design clothes, anything along those lines. And now that I further this brand, the idea, I kind of just go hand in hand, whatever feels right. And this year I finally moved to San Francisco and I continue my fashion marketing degree and my brand awareness, which I decided, well, what a great way to spread brand awareness by spreading and sharing mental health journeys, kind of like my own. So we started a podcast called the Self-Awareness Podcast, which is also AWEARNESS. And so now we're focusing on the podcast and hopefully for the future going to continue to share more resources and tools and coping mechanisms. Those were the baseline coping mechanisms that I used in order to progress my and start my mental health journey. But there's so many things that I am learning and continue to learn and share that can really help others start or further their mental health journey too. So that's kind of where we're at with the brand.
Awesome. That's such a cool beginning story and reason behind doing what you do. Where can people find you and where can they support you other than the podcast?
So we have our Instagram page that we're mostly active on, which is Awareness Athletics. And we're also on TikTok, slowly getting back into TikTok. So Awareness on Athletics on there, and also active on Facebook. So whatever you feel comfortable with, we have those connections and yeah, the podcast. And I think that's it.
Awesome. Well, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes for anyone that wants to check that out. Please go follow and support. And if you're in the position to make a purchase, I encourage you to do so because it really is supporting something that is incredibly needed awareness about mental health, starting these conversations. I think that's where we really begin to change the culture as a society when it comes to mental health. And that is very, very much needed now. Alicia also sent me a list of resources that I'll also put in the show notes. A lot of those are really, really incredible resources. So make sure you check those out. And Alicia, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you sharing your incredible story. Are there any last words or pieces of advice that you want to share with the audience?
Of course, and thank you for having me. I would say the last advice or phrase I would like to tell your listeners is sometimes we get so ahead of ourselves, and I know this is the case for me, but I would recommend giving yourself some grace, especially if you're on your mental health journey. Like we kind of went over today, it's not a linear line. And there are going to be ups and downs. So give yourself some grace and be patient with yourself. You're doing great. And, you know, you have support through, you know, these systems and through me and Rachel. So thank you for having me on today.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.